This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Samantha Donovan. This Friday, Canada mourns dozens of people lost in the Tehran plane crash. It's now thought a missile strike is to blame for the tragedy. And a caravan makes its way down the coast from Queensland to New South Wales for an Aboriginal elder after listeners heard on our program that she'd lost her home in the fires.
I reckon it's a very nice offer. Very thoughtful of them, you know. And for people all around, out of the state and all that's helped us, communities all down the southeast coast. It's just marvellous, the support that's out there.
Today, authorities are on high alert with warnings that fires are likely to worsen in several states. In Victoria, extreme temperatures and the forecast gusty cool change means firefighters are facing challenging conditions. The state's Emergency Management Commissioner is Andrew Crisp.
What we're saying, basically across the east of the state, if you can get out, you should get out. You should definitely not be in the more remote, the forested parts of that part of our state. You should get out. This is real.
In New South Wales, authorities say temperatures will reach the low 40s in parts of the state today, with dangerous conditions in the southeast a particular worry, and fire crews' preparations will be put to the test. On South Australia's Kangaroo Island, where fires have torn through a third of the land, cooler temperatures and rain are giving residents something of a reprieve. State Duty Commander Yvette Dowling from the South Australian Country Fire Service says crews are exhausted.
Locally, obviously, it's devastating for them. It's their own environment. We have got lots of crews going in from the mainland, but it's the mental devastation, especially of the local firefighters over there.
Our reporter David Sparks has been meeting people preparing for the dangerous weather in Victoria's East Gippsland.
In East Gippsland, the air is hot and smoky today, and people have prepared for the worst. Sue-Ann Leeshan lives in Bruthen, north of Bairnsdale.
Yeah, I do get nervous. I have been through it a few times, like the first lot of fires started November 21st. We're quite well aware of what fire behaviour can do.
These fires have caused devastation near Bruthen, especially in neighbouring Sarsfield. After repeatedly getting ready for high-risk fire days, people are feeling exhausted, both physically and mentally. But Sue-Ann says complacency is simply not an option.
It's been very tiring and, you've got to consider work, and we've got children as well, so you need to make sure that they're safe, and I would love to stay and just defend, do what I want to do, but I need to consider my girls, and they're my first and foremost, so I need to go to Bairnsdale, but this time round, I'm going to stay home and try and protect the property.
Have you evacuated at any point this summer?
Yes, I did last week. We went into Bairnsdale.
Also worried about the fire risk around Bruthen today is Susan Smith.
We've got bags packed. We've got quite good at the evacuation thing. My husband has asthma, so we get out of the smoke when we can. We've evacuated three times now, and we're just waiting and seeing today.
The state's emergency services will be glad to hear residents taking this safety-first approach. They're desperately trying to keep communities on guard. Incident controller Brett Mitchell says fire crews and residents must remain vigilant today. He says Omeo, which was badly hit on Saturday, already has fire on its outskirts today.
We've certainly got active fire already up in the Omeo area around Cabungra, so we can expect those fires to move up around Omeo and Cabungra, that sort of area. There are some other activity areas that we need to be aware of, but we've got around 1,200 kilometres of fire edge that we need to monitor today. So basically, all communities need to be really alert today because fires could build very quickly. It only has to be a stump or a log or something like that burning in a little bit of unburnt area, and activity can increase really quickly.
There are multiple emergency level and watch and act fires in East Gippsland and northeast Victoria today. Susan Smith says she won't be taking any risks.
Yeah, I've got a new saying, if in doubt, get out. So that's the advice I give everybody.
Susan Smith from Bruthen in East Gippsland, ending David Sparks' report. Well, one bright note during this bushfire crisis has been hearing how people are helping each other out. Earlier this week, The World Today spoke with Indigenous elder Bunja Smith from Batemans Bay on the south coast of New South Wales, where hundreds of homes have been lost. He mentioned that another elder had lost her home but didn't want to leave country and wanted to put a tent up across the road.
She's determined to remain there in Mogo because that's what she's familiar with. That's what she knows, and that's home. So she'd be more than likely eligible for emergency accommodation, but she doesn't want to leave the area that she's connected to.
A lot of people got in touch wanting to help, and now a donated caravan for Auntie Gloria is on its way down the coast from Queensland. Isabel Rowe reports from Maruya.
It was 3 days after the fatal New Year's Eve fires came through Mogo before Aboriginal elder Auntie Gloria could get back to her home to see what was left. It was the worst possible outcome. Nothing was salvageable.
I had to take a friend home to the bay when the raids cleared. I mean, two of my other girlfriends, I just had to go up to Mogo and just have a look. Well, I didn't cry at the moment, but when I was on my own, I did, when I went back a couple of days later. And I drove right up to the house then and just had a little walk around it. Very sad. All the memories in there, all my mother's stuff, things from my grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Sitting in a family member's home in nearby Maruya, she holds back tears, recounting the days after the fire.
Getting calls from out of the area as well, from family who was actually seeing it all on TV. And that's why they were so scared and worried, because they didn't know how any of us were. That went on for about a couple of days. Then the communications broke down. So then we were stuck, didn't know anything. Didn't know where to go, where was safe, what to do. That was a terrible time. I hope we never have to go through it again.
Auntie Gloria wants to go home, but her house is a pile of rubble. Power lines hang precariously across her driveway, and authorities have cordoned off areas over concerns about asbestos. So Auntie Gloria told her nephew she wanted a way to stay on country, across the road at what Mogo locals call the MCG, the local cricket ground.
I was just telling him I want to go back home. I want to go to the MCG and pitch up a tent so I can watch progress. Just keep looking across at the house and try not to get upset, but just terrible. So they just spread the word, and then Brother Bunge got onto it, called me back and said, we've got a few caravans offered.
Bunja Smith runs a home care business looking out for elders.
As fortune would have it, was interviewed by the ABC, and I happen to use that as an example of some of the need in the community, and I put a call out for a caravan. I asked if anyone had a caravan for her, it'd be better than a tent. And I was contacted by a mob called Find a Bed, and they very graciously, through their network, had found a caravan for Gloria that they'd like to give to her to keep her safe.
Fran is among those who heard the call out and decided to help. Volunteer drivers are bringing the caravan down the coast in stages. Right now, it's at Fran's place, awaiting the next driver who arrives tomorrow.
Quite literally, the caravan's parked on my front lawn, and it doesn't leave here till tomorrow. So that's a nice little opportunity to just maybe put some more goodies into it and maybe hassle a few more people around Coffs Harbour to chip in as well. Noting that, you know, we've had bushfires here since September, so we all know what it's like, and people are more than willing to help out.
Bunja Smith visited Gloria this morning in Maruya with the good news and showed her photos on his phone of the caravan on its way from the Gold Coast in Queensland.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah.
I feel a lot better having Glaws in something she can lock and keep. Whatever possessions the people donate to her, she'll be able to keep them safe.
Bunja Smith will pick it up in Wollongong and drive the last leg to Mogo. Auntie Gloria is thrilled at the prospect of being home soon.
It's just marvellous, all the offers of help that we're getting. Maybe some more family members or even will be quite welcome to go up there and stay too, I think. You know, I'm not really concerned about what the council says. I just want to go home.
The donors of the caravan want to remain anonymous, but say their mother grew up on the South Coast and they're just happy to be able to help the community.
Isabel Rowe reporting. Lovely to have some good news. We'll have more on the fires later, but overseas now, and the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says he's received intelligence that indicates an Iranian missile brought down a plane earlier this week, killing all 176 people on board. The Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says he's also had access to that intelligence. The Ukrainian plane crashed shortly after taking off from Iran's capital, Tehran, on Wednesday. The intelligence suggests the plane wasn't deliberately targeted. The passengers and crew were from at least seven countries, including 63 people from Canada. Sarah Seggi reports.
Footage purports to show an explosion close to the Ukrainian passenger plane. A short time later, the sound of what's thought to be the plane crashing. Now multiple governments say there is intelligence that suggests it was a missile that may have unintentionally downed the plane, with 176 people on board. None of them survived. Canada's Prime Minister is Justin Trudeau.
The news will undoubtedly come as a further shock to the families who are already grieving in the face of this unspeakable tragedy. We have intelligence from multiple sources, including our allies and our own intelligence. The evidence indicates that the plane was shot down by an Iranian surface-to-air missile. This may well have been unintentional.
US media is quoting officials who say two missiles were fired from an Iranian air defence system, one of them causing the downing of the plane. The UK and Australia have also been privy to the intelligence. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says Australia will be helping in the aftermath of the crash however it can.
Well, I've simply offered to the Prime Minister any assistance that they need, and that's also being provided through our DFAT channels through to their counterparts in Canada, and so we will just respond to their requests. And in relation to any investigation, well, it's up to those authorities that are directly engaged here to set up such an investigation. But, of course, whether it's through the many international partners who have lost citizens in the course of this terrible tragedy, and when I speak to the Ukrainian, my counterpart there, hopefully later today, then I'll obviously be offering the same assistance and support as they want to take up.
The plane was on the way to the Ukrainian capital, Kiev, and 138 of those on board were intending to go on from there to Canada. 63 of the victims were Canadian citizens. Among those who died were a husband and wife, Mojgan Danishmand and Pedra Musavi, both engineering professors from the University of Alberta, and their young daughters Daria and Darina. Other victims included a newlywed couple, a 48-year-old man who had been in Tehran visiting his sick father, and many university students. Toronto woman Zainab Asadilari died in the crash alongside her brother Mohammed. Both were in their 20s. A friend spoke to the CBC's Front Burner program.
She was full of dreams. She studied so hard to become a doctor, and as soon as she was getting her dream, she's gone.
The crash comes at a time when tensions between the US and Iran are running high. The plane came down just hours after Iran launched missile strikes on US bases in Iraq in retaliation for the US killing top Iranian General Qassem Soleimani. Reza Akbari is from the Iranian Heritage Society of Edmonton, a Canadian city where 30 victims were from. He spoke to BBC Newsnight.
This shows that when the intention can get very high to this scale, the only people who's going to be sacrificed, the only people who's going to be hurt, it's normal, ordinary people. Regardless of really what this happened to this airplane, just the current situation in Middle East, I would simply need, it's a time that everyone needs to step back and look at what we are doing, how we're making a decision.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says a full investigation is needed.
This new information reinforces the need for a thorough investigation into this matter. Canada is working with its allies to ensure that a thorough and credible investigation is conducted to determine the causes of this fatal crash.
An Iranian government spokesman has denied a missile caused the crash. Iran's Civil Aviation Authority is leading an investigation into what happened, but says it has given officials from the Transportation Safety Board of Canada access to the crash site.
Sarah Sedgie reporting. This is The World Today. You can find us on the ABC Listen app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The celebration of Australia Day on January the 26th has been controversial in recent years, with some councils deciding it's not appropriate to mark what some Indigenous Australians call Invasion Day. This year, councils have another worry. Are fireworks on the National Day appropriate when bushfires burn around the country? As Tim Skelton reports, a number of municipalities are deciding to cancel their displays.
Controversy is almost as much a part of Australia Day as sausages and citizenship ceremonies. In the past, a number of local councils have made headlines by proposing to move the date of their Australia Day celebrations out of respect for Indigenous Australians. This year, the concern is whether to cancel their fireworks displays out of respect for bushfire victims. Sharon Ellis is the Mayor of Whitehorse Council in Melbourne's East.
Well, I guess we saw the devastation and the heartache that people in New South Wales and Victoria were suffering, and we basically thought it was insensitive. We cancelled it as a sign of solidarity, a show of solidarity with the people that are doing it tough at the moment.
She says the response from the community has been overwhelmingly positive.
Could I say up front, this does not mean we're not celebrating Australia Day. We will still be doing our festivities, our awards, our great concert. It is simply the last 10 minutes of the celebration that will be cancelled, which is the fireworks display. But we are still going to proceed with the concert, etc.
The ACT government cancelled their New Year's Eve fireworks display, partly out of respect for bushfire victims, but also because of concerns about safety. They've also decided to cancel the Australia Day fireworks. Jo Verdon is from Events ACT.
We're very sympathetic and absolutely empathetic to what is going on at the moment. And a lot of people, our wildlife, our habitats are being impacted heavily. But it's also about our emergency services personnel who have been working tirelessly and who are continuing to work tirelessly and making sure that if the need arises that they can be deployed and utilised in the places which are about focusing on protecting life and property.
Jo Verdon says the community supported the decision to cancel the New Year's Eve fireworks and there hasn't been a backlash against this decision either.
Look, I think it's been a challenging summer for many people, not just people here in Canberra, right across the country. For Canberrans, you know, we are impacted and have been impacted by the smoke, haze and air quality in recent weeks, like other states and territories have also been. So the feeling at the moment, I think people are on alert.
Other councils, like the City of Ballarat, have decided to keep their fireworks displays, but will also use the event as an opportunity to raise money for people and animals affected by the fires. In the past, the federal government has pushed back hard against councils who tried to alter their Australia Day events, threatening to withdraw the right to perform citizenship ceremonies. But this isn't a debate the Prime Minister Scott Morrison seems eager to be drawn into, as he told Radio 3AW this morning.
That will be, those decisions will be made on the basis of fire authorities dealing directly with local governments.
Australia Day is still a couple of weeks out, and it's possible more councils will make the decision to cancel their fireworks, either out of respect for bushfire victims or for safety concerns. How that will play into the customary debate about the day itself is not yet clear.
Tim Skelton reporting. Back to the firegrounds, and farmers in Victoria, New South Wales and South Australia are assessing the impact the blazes have had on their properties and livestock. Our national rural reporter Kath Sullivan met East Gippsland farmer Jo Travascus on her property.
It's black. There's black and there's not a lot of fences left.
Here at Wairewa, about 350 kilometres east of Melbourne, Joe Travascus is dealing with a very different outlook. Having spent the early hours of New Year's Eve, together with her parents, protecting her home from bushfire.
The noise was insane. It was pretty hot and there seemed to be just fire coming from every angle. There were spot fires coming through the paddock. There was a fire from two different, coming from the front and two different sides with trees.
While the home was saved, the impact on farm is confronting.
We first of all went looking for animals that had survived with the gun, and we were pretty happy that we did find some straight away. And one property came to the next property, and all we found to start with was just black ash and three or four dead bodies straight away. And I didn't think anything could possibly have survived, but we went over a ridge down and saw one very small section of the creek, and we looked over and there were probably about 70 head just surviving. Yeah. In that very small section, completely burnt out all around them.
But not all of those cattle have survived.
The damage to their feet actually start to almost fall off because of the heat. So we have to put down, you have to put down the animals before they get to that level of pain, obviously.
Jo, we're looking over one of your paddocks at the moment. It's completely brown and charred. I can't imagine what it looked like before the front came through, but there are some people working there.
Yep, so they are currently or have just finished building a pit to bury all our dead livestock, which were approximately 20 head of out of about 95.
That heartbreak's been felt by farmers around the country this summer. Victoria's Rural Assistance Commissioner Peter Toohey worries about the load that brings.
In a couple of weeks' time, and everybody's gone, you've got no fences, you've got no feed, you've got a lot of dead livestock. It's going to be very painful for a lot of people.
Despite her losses, Jo Travascus remains optimistic.
The grass will come back and we can rebuild fences. We're just lucky we didn't lose any people.
East Gippsland farmer Jo Travascus ending that report from Kath Sullivan. A young Afghan refugee who began painting only 6 years ago is now looking forward to her first exhibition. A small Sydney gallery is to show 25 of Nila Hadari's works. She's hoping the event will start a conversation with Australians unfamiliar with the struggles and strengths of Afghani women, as Julia Andre reports.
Closing their eyes, they're showing the women they can't see outside the house.
A woman in a bright blue burqa, her mouth sewn shut. Refugees walking a tightrope. Men in traditional dress on horseback. Nilab Hadari has been staying up until 3 in the morning painting these scenes in preparation for her inaugural art exhibition. Paint, brushes and canvases line her family's small garage in Western Sydney. Her paintings depict her experience as a refugee, as well as memories of her life in Afghanistan and the violence women there faced.
That's the true story. It's called like Rukhsana, and she's like very young, and the Taliban killed him by the throwing rock. And
Nilab's family is Hazara, an ethnic group persecuted by the Taliban. Fleeing from the violence, her mother took her three daughters and escaped across the Afghan-Pakistan border. They were granted refugee status by the United Nations and came to Australia under the humanitarian program in 2014. In Australia, Nilab found solace in painting.
When I was so sad and I do some painting and all my sadness is gone. My painting is not professional, but it came from heart and it sits in the heart, you know?
Curator and artist Mari Schladira is hosting Nilab's exhibition at the Art Gallery on Darling in the inner Sydney suburb of Balmain.
Being an artist-run space, we like to support everybody that we possibly can in the creative community because it is a little bit harder to find gallery representation. Pretty excited that she is so proactive because it is really tricky being proactive at such a young age, getting into a field that requires you to do a lot of work by yourself.
Muhadissa, Nilab's older sister, hopes the upcoming art exhibition will serve as a conversation starter.
As a girl, when I lived in Afghanistan province, I don't have a right to go to school. Even I don't have a right to go outside without a man.
The exhibition begins on January 20th and the sisters say they can't wait.
I'm so excited to go there and I meet different people. We will feel very proud and very happy because the number one thing is that we feel that we are part of society. So I'm really look forward to seeing lovely Australian people. I know they are very kind and beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, true.
That report from Julia Andre. And that's The World Today for this week. The program's supervising producer is Barbara Miller. Technical production by Ingrid Wagner and Alan Arthur. We'll be back at the same time on Monday. I'm Samantha Donovan. Have a good, safe weekend.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.